accusing
civil unrest.
Today, large crowds
missiles have been launched.
Gas prices are crashing.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
But what if? What if Christians acted like we were called to? What if we acted with humility, respect, compassion, and love? Let's do unto others.
I was telling Beck as they brought these things forward, I said, that was just a perfect song. That was a perfect song for where we find ourselves. And so I'm so grateful for our band and them leading us into this place of worship together as we get ready to go into our message. You know, if I haven't met you yet, my name is Mindy Moore, and I am the campus pastor here at St. Luke's Midtown. And we are right in the middle of a four-week series on what I like to call two topics that make people squirm, especially when you put them together. And that is faith and politics. We talked last week how these were the two things that in my home growing up, we said, you do not talk about these things in public because they can be so divisive. And yet here we are in public, in this church service, having these conversations. And I think today might be the hardest thing we talk about for all 4 weeks. I also think it might be one of the most important things that we talk about for all 4 weeks. Today, we're talking about the topic of Christian nationalism. Now, friends, I think we need to have this conversation because if we look out into our world, if we look at the greater political conversation that's happening, this is in it. If we look at so many of our churches, this is in it. I think if we look at the world and what people's perceptions of what it means to be a Christian is right now, this is in it. And so I just want you to know, as we talk about this topic, which may, you know, just even hearing those two words, it might have brought up some stuff in you. I want you to know I take it so seriously that this is a safe and welcoming space for all people. And so no matter how you vote, no matter what your political affiliation is, friends, you are welcome here into this conversation, into this space, into this worshiping community. And I hope a couple things for us during this message. I hope that we can make two commitments to each other as we have this conversation. And the first thing is, I hope that we would hold a spirit of curiosity this morning. Maybe that is a spirit of curiosity about your own beliefs. Maybe it is a spirit of curiosity about what someone else believes. But if you find yourself in this message running into what I'll call a sharp edge of disagreement, or maybe a little fear, a little panic, whatever comes up, I just want to invite you to hold that space. Sometimes when we come up into those places where we do feel that sharp edge, our temptation is just to disengage. It's to tune out. It's to be like, oh, Pastor Mindy, you told me there was something I disagree with, and now we're here, and I'm over it. That's our temptation. But my prayer for us is that we would do something different, that we'd hold the space, that we'd let the Spirit work, that we would ask some good questions as we have this conversation. The second thing I want you to do today, that I want us to do today, is to hold on to a spirit of hope. So we're going to hold a spirit of curiosity. We're going to hold a spirit of hope. And I know that the second thing I'm asking us to do is not always easy in the world that we live in. But I'll just give you a spoiler to how this sermon's going to go. That's where we're going to end up. We're going to end up in a place of hope. We're going to end up in a place of action and empowerment because I think that's what God invites us to. It's not to be hopeless people. It's not to say, well, the whole thing is just trash and what do? It's to say God is at work in us and through us. And so today I want you to hold on to that spirit of hope. I think if I'm really honest today, I know that these two things are really easy to set down when we look at the world around us. They're really easy to set down when we hear the news cycle, when we hear rhetoric about who we should be afraid of, when we hear stories that create the sense of us and them, when we look around our own community and see stories of hate in action. I mean, I just saw an article a couple of weeks ago about a woman who, in what she called a spirit of protest, rammed her car into a school that she thought was a Jewish school, and then she found out was actually run by a hate group. I just read this story, and I thought, what is happening here? I mean, extremism is here, it's there, it's everywhere, and it just feels overwhelming. And I think as a pastor, and I hope as people of faith, when we see that extremism wrap itself in the name of Jesus, some alarm bells should go off. We should be concerned. And so that's what we're looking at today. Now, as we unpack this, I think a really good place for us to start is to understand the difference between patriotism and nationalism. Because as I hear this conversation happen out in our world, sometimes I see us lay these two things on top of each other. We act like they're the same thing, and I actually think that's one of the reasons we have so much division in this conversation. And so Brady Whitten, he's the pastor of Grace UMC in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. He defines these terms these two ways. He says that patriotism is a devoted love, support, and defense of country. He goes on to say that nationalism, on the other hand, is about asserting the interests of one's own nation over the common interests of humanity. It's about preserving an identity. Often that's determined by religion or race. It often results in one group being excluded and one group being included, and we lose our way as we try to define what a nation is. And so as we look at this idea of Christian nationalism, like, what does that mean? How do we define that? There's this article in Christianity Today. It's by Paul Miller, and I would highly encourage you to Google it, read it, if you want to know more about this topic in just a really straightforward, easy-to-understand way. It's a fantastic article. But he defines Christian nationalism as the belief that the American nation is defined by Christianity and that the government should take active steps to keep it that way. How we often see this work itself out in our country right now is that Christian nationalists often hold to this idea that our nation was founded as a Christian nation. The challenge with that viewpoint is that it doesn't exactly match what was going on. If you look back into history, you'll find that our founders, while some of them were deeply spiritual people, deeply Christian people, they had left a place with a national faith. And they were deeply concerned about establishing that in their new country. This might sound less noble, but it was real. They also had conversations about the fact that, hey, if we make this a Christian nation, we've got the slight complication that we've got a ton of denominations calling themselves Christians. We've got a ton of ways of expressing that faith. So how in the world are we going to decide what this looks like? And so even in the earliest days of our country, there was this tension. And I think we can agree that there's a tension now that we're living in our space and time. There's tension about how to live out certain values, about who gets to make decisions and have rights. There's tension about how the Christian faith intersects with the public sphere. And all of that stuff is kind of like the stuff you see on the news. I call that the macro level, the high level. That doesn't even touch the tension that we feel in our interpersonal relationships, which I think for some of us is where this tension feels the hardest. It's when we're talking to our family member, when we're talking to our coworker, when we're talking to our neighbor, and we're trying to figure out, how do we work this out? How do we have a conversation that makes sense and is kind and lives into this idea of doing unto others? You know, I'm not going to stand up here this morning and tell you that, like, any kind of nationalism has good, holy roots. Because it doesn't. I mean, if you look throughout time and history and across the world, it always comes back to things like racism and classism and discrimination. But I do think it's important to say today that the real people in my life, and you might have some of these real people in your life, who hold on to this way of thinking, this isn't where they're starting. Most of the people who I know that would identify with this political viewpoint, they're not starting in those places. They're starting in places like wanting to uphold their family values, wanting to keep their communities what they would consider safe, wanting their faith, which they treasure, to make an impact on the country they live in. But I think what comes with that desire sometimes, whether it's spoken or under the surface, is that Christianity goes from being something that looks like Jesus to being sort of a vehicle of power, where Christianity would have the final say whether people believe it or not, where the Bible would be the guiding document whether people view it as sacred or not, and it just gets messy, it can get oppressive, it can be a problem. Now, I do want to take like one moment of levity with us. It's really the only one, okay, in the whole sermon. One moment of levity this whole 25 minutes. So let's like breathe for 2 seconds. The Bible being used in this way, the Christian faith being used in this way in our country, it is not actually new. Believe it or not, it is not new. And there is a great book. I'm going to tell you about 3 books today. I was telling someone this earlier. I was like, 3 book recommendations from Pastor Mindy. But Caitlin Sheese's book, The Ballot and the Bible. This is recommendation number one. She talks about how the use of the Bible, how the use of faith has woven its way into our country since our founding. And she calls this weird uses of the Bible in American politics. So I'm going to share with you 2 examples from this book. She said one early 20th century preacher and leader of the social gospel movement, Washington Gladden, said in a speech that Jesus couldn't quite get his Sermon on the Mount program off the ground in the first century. But good news, it was finally coming true in 1910s America. I don't know if you know much about 1910s America. I'm going to ask some questions about that statement and if that was really true. If we go back in history, she says in 1802, Baptist evangelist John Leland gave a special gift to Thomas Jefferson at his inauguration. It was a 1,235-pound block of cheese, and it was covered in a red crust that said, "Rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God," quoting Acts 5:29. Now, just apparently it's Pastor Appreciation Day. I will take a block of cheese. Okay, I will take that gift, whether it's got a Bible verse or not. But you can see like how this has happened in our country. And again, those are humorous things. It's not new. But I do think what's happening now, there's something new about it. Because what does feel new to me about this conversation about Christian nationalism is that as I watch this way of thinking try to gain more traction, gain more influence, the irony, I think, the unintended consequence is I'm watching the church get fractured and torn apart in its wake. One very public example of this is the story of Russell Moore. You may know his name because he used to be a top leader in the Southern Baptist Convention. He was a rising star. He was the president of one of their big agencies. And he's featured in the 2nd book recommendation of the day, which is Tim Alberta's book, The Kingdom, the Power, and the Glory. So they tell his story, and he talks about how he went from being this prominent leader to being completely exiled. And he was exiled because he spoke out against Christian nationalism. He spoke out about the way that his denomination was becoming very partisan and really connected to one political party. And he said, guys, this isn't who we are. This isn't right. This isn't where God is taking us. And so instead of having a conversation, he was shown the door. Now, as I read through his story, I found it to be very sad and disappointing, but what I thought was so interesting is that it's not just his story. This is a bigger story about something that's happening in our country. And one of the statistics that Alberta shares with us is that in 1991, according to the Pew Research Center, 90% of Americans, 90% identified as being Christian. That stat is hard for me to wrap my head around. And 5% identified as being religiously unaffiliated. Now, if you fast forward 30 years, 63% of Americans identified as being Christian, and 29% called themselves unaffiliated. You can see the massive shift in those statistics. I think what's interesting is if you pair that with another reading that I did, sociologist Ryan Burge says that politics has become America's master identity. So the thing that people hold up is the number one piece that they identify with. I mean, you see those stats, you hear that, you can feel the tension and the division brewing with all of those different things being true. And I think in the midst of all of this change, of all of this division, we can see how we've gotten a little bit lost. We can see how we've moved away from what Jesus says in one of the scriptures we heard today, where he says, "My kingdom is not of this world." I think you can see why it's easy to lose hope and why it's hard to have a good, productive conversation with people who we may be very different from. But I want you to remember one of those things I asked you to do today, which was to hold on to hope. Because look, I think it's important we talk about this because it is a real challenge in our world. There are real harms that are happening under the name of Christian nationalism. All that stuff is real. But we aren't helpless. We aren't without tools. God has not left us. God is at work. And I think we as people of faith need to hold on to that, especially in this season that we find ourselves in. And so I just want to share with you the last part of this sermon, just some things that you can do. Some of them are very simple. Some of them feel like bigger spiritual transformation things. But I just want you to leave this place knowing that there is something you can do, that there is hope to hold on to and live into. So the first thing that I would tell you right off the bat is, friends, show up and vote. I'm never going to tell you from this platform who to vote for. That is not a good use of this space. But I am always going to tell you to use that right. And I will not go on my big thought about this in this moment. But if you want to talk after, I'll tell you all the things I've learned about voting rights over the last few years. It is so important. So use that right. Use your voice. Use your agency. But then I'd also say, do the spiritual work in yourself to transform the way that you show up in our world and in your relationships. I look at this as kind of moving in this like inward, outward shift. And I think for those of us who follow Jesus, who hold on to Christianity, it actually starts in this super individual place, which is that we need to identify that our true identity is found in Jesus. When we hear that stat that people are saying, oh, my identity is this way that I vote or my political party. Friends, if you follow Jesus, that's not true. Our true identity is found in who Christ is. We're all beloved children of God. We are all made in God's image. That is both good news. That also means it's really hard to yell back at someone who's sitting across from you. It means it's really hard to hate someone you deeply disagree with because we all show up and bear the image of God. We all have the responsibility wherever we find ourselves to be more and more like Jesus. That's my call. That's your call. That's our call as a faith community. So we start with our identity being in Jesus. And then I think from there, we move to examine the relationship between what we believe and how we believe it. You know, I said last week that we can and should have deep convictions about important things. I'm not going to tell you you should be like neutral and just smile and nod, especially not when you see injustice happening or oppression taking place. Jesus didn't like those things either. But remember what we said last Sunday in this space. We deeply engage, but we don't lose the human in front of us while we do that. How we believe is just as important as what we believe. And I think that leads us into our next piece of response here, which is that we commit to seeking justice for our neighbors. Here's your last book recommendation of the day. So in Obrey M. Hendricks' book, Christians Against Christianity, he explores Christian nationalism in great detail, greater than I could do in a 20-some minute sermon. But as he talks about this, he unpacks this concept of righteousness found in the Old Testament. Now, when we hear righteousness in our context now, a lot of times we think about, oh, good behavior. They were a good person. They did the right things. But he actually challenges that, and he says, you know what? It's not actually about me as an individual. In fact, he says that there is no term in the Hebrew of the Old Testament for individual. That concept did not exist. People actually judged themselves and their actions through the eyes of their community and the common good rather than as individuals. And so if we think about it through that lens, our righteousness, our ability to show up like Jesus would hope, it all hinges on how we love our neighbor. It all hinges on who we care about and the way that we love the oppressed and we love the marginalized. It's the way that we do unto others, the way we would have them do unto us. I think that's why when Jesus goes into the synagogue at the very beginning of his ministry, he says the words that we heard Amy read earlier. He picks up a scroll and he reads a scripture and it says, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to set free those who are oppressed, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." What I think is amazing about this and what we can hold on to is that when Jesus shows up on the scene, when he says, "These are the things I want you to know about me," it's not about making himself more powerful. It's not about making his name better known. It's about loving people in a radical way. It's about relationships that were transformational. It's about changed hearts. It's about changed ways of living. It's about prioritizing people who had been cast aside and marginalized. That's what Jesus was about. That's the hope that Jesus wanted to bring and wanted his followers to live out too. You know, I, like you, I'm guessing, have been watching all the coverage of hurricane relief and hurricane just destruction that's happening in the southeastern part of our country. And I think as we get ready to close today, I just want to leave you with some really tangible hope. Because we can hear, you know, like, okay, you're supposed to have hope, you're supposed to do hope, and you'd be like, cool, how? How do I do that? Please tell me. Well, I'm going to tell you. Because one of the things that has brought me so much hope in this season is watching how people are working together to clean up their communities, especially in North Carolina. Because in North Carolina, I think, wow, this is actually a pretty politically diverse state. Like, there's a lot going on. There's neighbors that might vote radically differently from each other. And yet I'm watching them set that stuff down. I'm watching them come together to rebuild communities. What I'm not seeing is Republicans helping Republicans. What I'm not seeing is Democrats helping Democrats. I'm just seeing neighbors help neighbors. I'm just seeing people love people. And as I've been watching these stories unfold, I've had to really look inside myself and say, this is a better story than I think I've believed that we could tell. I've been challenged by it in a good way. And as I think about what maybe our challenge is as people of faith, as we hold on to hope, it's that we get to tell a better story too. And we don't just get to tell it. We get to actually create it. We get to write it. We get to be part of making a better story in our midst. A story that cares for all people, that doesn't say you're in and you're out, but says come to the table, be part of the community, know the love of Jesus. A story that lives into that scripture we heard from Revelation this morning, where all people in their fullest, wholest selves get to experience the overwhelming love of Christ. I think that's who we can be. And I think that we, as people who follow Jesus, get to create that story and find our hope there. Now, I know that as we create that hope, it may not be totally perfect. It may not be fully realized in our lifetime. But I do think it's the hope that we can contribute to our world and to our country. And I think that's the kind of hope that makes a difference. Our band is going to come up, and they're going to play this song called God Will Work It Out. And what I want to invite us to do just for the first part of this song is just to make some space to hear these words, to pray whatever in our heart, to ask questions of how God would have us be part of that hope creating. And then as they sing, at some point, Beck will invite us to stand and join. But let me pray for us as we go into this moment of reflection together. God, things can seem so big and so overwhelming and just so beyond our control or our influence. And yet what we know, Jesus, is that you call us to follow in your footsteps. And that means you call us to action. You call us to love. You call us to trust. And so, God, as we look at our world, as we wonder what you're up to, as we wonder what our role is, I pray that we would hold on to the words of this song and let them be our prayer. That you are at work. That you are at work. God, that you are at work.